Why do we sabotage our own goals? Why does knowing better rarely lead to doing better? The answer lies in a truth both ancient philosophers and modern neuroscientists have discovered. You are not one unified self making rational choices. You're more like a rider perched atop an elephant, trying desperately to steer a creature 10 times your size with a mind entirely its own. This metaphor captures something profound about human nature. Your rational mind, the rider, can analyze, plan, and set intentions. But the elephant, your emotions, instincts, and automatic responses, often goes where it wants. Ever resolve to eat healthy, only to find yourself elbow deep in chips an hour later? That's your elephant overruling your rider. This isn't a character flaw, it's neural architecture. The emotional, automatic systems evolved first and remain far more powerful than our newer conscious reasoning. Understanding this division doesn't just explain why willpower fails, it reveals how to actually change your behavior by working with your elephant rather than fighting it. The division runs even deeper than emotion versus reason. Split-brain research revealed something startling. When surgeons severed the connection between brain hemispheres to treat severe epilepsy, two separate consciousnesses emerged in one person. The left hemisphere, controlling language, would confidently explain actions initiated by the silent right hemisphere, even though it had no idea why those actions occurred. If researchers showed the word walk only to the right brain, the patient would stand up. When asked why, the speaking left brain would invent a reason. I wanted to get a soda. This wasn't lying. The left brain genuinely believed its explanation. We all have this interpreter module constantly generating stories about why we do what we do. Think about your last major life decision. You probably have a neat narrative explaining your choice. But was that the real reason, or a story your interpreter crafted after the fact to maintain your sense of being a rational, coherent self? Ever driven somewhere and arrived with no memory of the journey? That's System 1, your automatic processing system, handling routine tasks while your conscious mind wanders. This system operates constantly, effortlessly, and invisibly, managing everything from recognizing faces to instant emotional reactions. System 2, conscious, deliberate reasoning, is slow, effortful, and easily overwhelmed, which explains why willpower is such a limited resource. The famous marshmallow experiment reveals how self-control actually works. Successful children didn't white-knuckle through temptation. They used strategies like looking away, pretending the marshmallow was a picture, or singing songs. They redirected what their automatic system focused on. Direct confrontation with temptation rarely works. Instead, redesign your environment. Don't keep ice cream in the house. Don't scroll social media in bed. Make desired behaviors easy and undesired ones hard. Ancient Stoics understood that suffering stems not from events, but from interpretations. Modern cognitive therapy builds on this insight. Your elephant doesn't respond to logic. It learns through association, repetition, and emotion. Three approaches effectively reshape automatic processing. Meditation trains attention, creating space between stimulus and response. Cognitive therapy targets automatic thought patterns, and sometimes medication helps. By repeatedly catching and reframing distorted thoughts, you gradually reprogram your automatic responses. Human cooperation runs on reciprocity, the instinctive need to return favors and punish norm violators. This isn't learned, it's hardwired. Marketers exploit this constantly. Free samples trigger your reciprocity reflex, making purchases more likely. We also punish unfairness at personal cost. In economic games, people reject unfair offers even when accepting would benefit them materially. This altruistic punishment deters cheaters and maintains social order. Gossip spreads information about trustworthiness, serving as society's low-cost enforcement mechanism. Recognizing how gifts influence us enables more deliberate responses and helps break retaliation cycles before they escalate. We spot others' flaws easily while remaining blind to our own. People rate themselves above average on almost every positive trait, not from arrogance, but cognitive bias maintaining self-esteem. We credit successes to ourselves while blaming failures on circumstances. This creates naive realism, the conviction that we see reality objectively while others are biased. In conflicts, each side believes they're responding reasonably to provocation while opponents act from malice. As the saying goes, I'm standing my ground, you're being stubborn. We demonize adversaries, casting them as purely evil, rather than recognizing most harmful actions stem from people who believe they're justified. Ancient wisdom teaches that happiness comes from wanting what you have, not getting what you want. Modern research confirms this through the adaptation principle, our ability to adjust to life changes. Studies show lottery winners and paralyzed individuals both return to baseline happiness levels, explaining why material success disappoints. A happiness formula emerges: H equals S plus C plus V. Happiness equals your biological set point, 50% of variation, plus circumstances, plus voluntary activities. While we can't change our set point, we can improve the other factors. Some circumstances matter long term. Chronic commuting decreases well-being, while strong social relationships provide lasting benefits. The most promising path is voluntary activities that induce flow, absorption in challenging but manageable tasks where you lose self-consciousness and time awareness. Unlike fleeting pleasures, flow engages your strengths and creates lasting accomplishment. The happiest people don't pursue happiness directly. They lose themselves in meaningful work, relationships, and purposes beyond themselves. When we build lives rich in connection and purpose, happiness follows naturally. Nietzsche claimed, "What doesn't kill me makes me stronger." Research on post-traumatic growth reveals partial truth. Survivors often report deeper life appreciation, stronger relationships, increased personal strength, and new possibilities. Longitudinal studies confirm these aren't illusions. Measurable positive changes occur. But growth isn't automatic. Challenges during late teens to early 20s yield greatest growth. Moderate adversity benefits more than minimal or overwhelming trauma. Most crucial, strong support systems dramatically increase finding meaning in suffering. Constructing coherent narratives, incorporating trauma into life's story, predicts better outcomes than remaining confused. Optimists find this easier, using active coping and seeking silver linings. This offers a middle path between glorifying suffering and viewing it only as damage. As Viktor Frankl observed, when we can't change a situation, we're challenged to change ourselves. Those who emerge stronger don't do so alone. They're supported by relationships, sustained by sense-making narratives, and guided by purpose-giving values. Growth through adversity isn't about trauma being good. It's about human resilience extracting meaning even from experiences we'd never choose. What makes life meaningful? Meaning emerges from connections. What happens between you and other people, activities, and values. When you find vital engagement with work that matters and connects you to others, meaning naturally follows. When your actions, thoughts, and cultural context align, what psychologists call cross-level coherence, you experience purpose that helps navigate life's challenges. Religious traditions offer rituals synchronizing physical actions, personal meaning, and cultural narratives. But secular sources prove equally powerful. Scientific discovery, artistic creation, social justice, or loving family connections. Here's the paradox. The happiest people don't pursue happiness directly. They lose themselves in meaningful connections, to work engaging their strengths, to people they love, to purposes transcending individual concerns. As Frankl observed, happiness cannot be pursued. It must ensue from dedication to a cause greater than oneself. Your fulfillment lies not in looking inward, but in directing attention outward to connections giving your life meaning. Understanding the rider and elephant transforms how we approach change. Breaking self-defeating patterns requires cultivating non-judgment, observing without categorizing experiences as good or bad. When we pause before jumping to conclusions about others' motives, we create space for understanding rather than escalation. This doesn't mean accepting harmful behavior, but recognizing that self-righteousness blinds us to our own contributions to conflict. Respect your elephant's power rather than fighting it through willpower alone. Design environments that make desired behaviors easy and undesired ones difficult. Use meditation to create space between stimulus and response. Apply cognitive therapy to challenge distorted automatic thoughts. In relationships, recognize how reciprocity shapes interactions, both the obligation to return favors and the tendency to reciprocate harm. Stop pursuing happiness directly and instead build a life rich in vital connections. Engage deeply with work that uses your strengths. Invest in relationships that matter. Commit to purposes transcending individual concerns. When rider and elephant work together toward meaningful goals, happiness emerges as the natural byproduct of a life fully lived.